Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Ernest, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors. And it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now.
Ernest, it's 2021, the year of execution. In order to execute, we have to have information. And the number one place to get the information, EYL University. Shadi, tell them what we bring in.
Yes, EYL University has been reloaded. We already have 100 past webinars. We already have weekly webinars. We already have our private investment group on Facebook. We already have monthly financial planning calls. We already have bi-weekly real estate calls. But what has been added to EYL University this year is access to MG the Mortgage Guy's Home Buyer's Blueprint, which walks you through the home buying process from A to Z. And what also has been added, breaking news alert. Everybody always asks to be in our group chat.
How do I get in there?
And when we talk about all the investment plays that we are making, we are going to have investment calls, group chat calls with me, Troy, and the whole team, and walk you through our plays that we're making and give you insight into our portfolios. All of that for 75% off. That's right. We are doing a blowout sale, 75% off for a limited time only. Go to EYLUniversity.com right now and sign up.
See you on the other side.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop. F- a mic drop, bag drop.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, we on our last leg in Atlanta. This time, we'll always be back. It's always love out here.
Yeah, yeah.
So we ending this with a bang.
Big one.
Yeah, this is one that I'm excited for. I know Troy's definitely excited for.
Inky Spirits Johnson. Have been lifted.
Inky Johnson, if you're not familiar, you've been under a rock for the last 5 years, 10 years. So I don't even call him motivational speaker, inspirational speaker.
Confident.
Yeah, for sure. Father, family man, best-selling author, philanthropist, entrepreneur. The list goes on. And this is going to be a dope conversation because we've never really have had a detailed conversation with anybody that was a motivational, inspirational public speaker on a really like larger scale. So, for me, it's always dope to actually get the backstories and learn the inner workings of it. But then also from a technical standpoint, learning the business and learning about, you know, putting yourself out there. A lot of people, I feel like everybody has a story. Like Ash Cash says, everybody has a story. Yeah. Everybody should write a book, or everybody should, because you never know who could relate to you, who could help.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you're watching somebody on TV, somebody potentially could be watching you on TV on the flip side. So this is a conversation that, you know, is going to cross a variety of different fields and factors, I'm sure. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us, brother. Appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure, man. Got great respect, admiration for both of you brothers, man, and what you do. So I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. All right. So let's jump right into it. You know, people might have seen your clips on Instagram. They might have seen you on YouTube. They might have, you know, heard you from a variety of different outlets. But they might not fully know, like, how you got to this point, right? Mm-hmm. So can we go a little bit about the backstory? I know you was an athlete. And, you know, your life obviously changed drastically. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely, man. You know, former collegiate athlete, you know, my whole life, you know, I wanted to make it to the league.
Mm.
You know, I grew up here in Atlanta, Southeast Corner, yeah. Kirkwood, Zone 6.
Zone 6.
You know.
East Atlanta, Santa.
Future man, you know, all them cats be at, man. I grew up on that side, you know, product of Atlanta public school system. And my mom had me at 16, and she took me back to 125 Warren, two-bedroom home, 14 people. And I sleep on the floor, you know, on pallets, like, you know, cats in the inner city, some of the best times of my life. But I was fortunate because I got to see both sides of it. You know, you see the side to where a cat out in the street, they doing what they doing. And then you see the side when people get up and go to work every day, but me watching my mom. And so I wanted to make it to the NFL because I wanted to give my family a better way of life. And I was the first one in my family to go to college, play ball. And my junior year, man, I was a projected first round draft pick as a corner.
Mm.
I went out to make a tackle and almost lost my life. You know, and it ended up changing my life. And my dream died that day, September 9th, 2006. You know, it became one of the greatest days of my life, you know, outside of marrying my wife and having my two children.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. I mean, yeah. I mean, even you saying that's one of the best days of your life, most people would see it as like, yo, that's probably the most drastic day of my life because my dreams have now been deferred and potentially ended.
Absolutely.
And that time, September 6th, what's the process of it? You're like, all right, this is all over. Or you're like, you know what? I'm still here. I'm still breathing. I could still be winning.
Yeah, it was surreal, man. At first, just being honest, man, total transparency. I didn't think I could lose it that quick. You know, because I had been working. It's like if you work for something from the time you're 7 to 20 and you give everything you got to it, like you don't think you can lose it with an injury, right? Like I never thought I could go out one day and make a tackle. Even though you hear about it, you don't think it can happen to you. It's like when you tell a young cat, hey, man, do this, do that. You know, save for rainy days when a cat tells somebody that. Cats be like, yeah, I hear you, but, you know, it's not going to happen to me. So when it happened, I was disappointed, but, you know, I knew I wasn't quitting. I knew I wasn't giving up, right? I didn't have anything to go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tell people all the time, like, you never know how strong you are until being strong is the only choice you have. And in that moment of adversity, I felt like being strong was the only choice I had. Like, I was coming from a two-bedroom home with 14 people. Like, what, I'm going to just go back to the porch, you know what I'm saying, sleep on the floor? And so it was about processing it and figuring out a way to use it.
So in that moment, or when, at what point do you say, okay, because I'm sure that there has to be some level of, like, you know, depression that kicks in, or, and then it's like, all right, you know what? Not only am I going to get past this, but I'm actually going to inspire other people by telling my story and, you know, just giving the game on it. So at what point do you realize, like, the way for you is actually public speaking and sharing your story?
Yeah, so that was a process. And so the nature of my injury, the reason I almost lost my life, I ruptured my subclavian artery in my chest. And so when they ran the test, they noticed I was bleeding internally.
What is that? What's that?
It's like the main artery in your chest.
Like where your heart is?
Yeah. Like, I just know that. You said that joint, the main one. Right? And so it's the main artery, and I was bleeding, right, internally. But at the time when I'm bleeding internally, I'm sitting here, and I'm talking like we talk.
Regular.
Right? In a room, talking to my mom, chilling. And the doctor rushes in, and my man's like, we got to rush you back to surgery right now. You bleeding internally. You're about to die. And I'm like, I'm thinking he's joking. And he's like, nah, you bleeding internally. We got to take the main vein out of your left leg and plug it into your chest. And the next morning I wake up, I got 6 cuts down my left thigh, 1 cut across the left side of my neck, 1 across the right, 2 through my right ribs, cut out my right pec, bottom of my armpit to the bottom of my hand, 350 staples in my body. They had bandaged me from my neck to my knees. Because when they went in to repair the artery, I had torn the nerves from my spine that controls my shoulder, my arm, my hands, and my fingers. And so at that point, they was like, it's over. And I would go out and do community service even after I would do rehab and things of that nature, because I needed something to shift my mindset, right? And coming up, a lot of people had helped me and my family. And so when I would go into these environments, to answer your question about speaking, I would go in and a cat, like, you could see my arm, right? You could see the atrophy. You could see right off, like, something happened to him. You know what I'm saying? So people would be saying, as we would be doing Habitat for Humanity community service, cats would just come over and be like, what happened? Like, what happened to your arm? And I just be like, oh, football injury. And cats were like, nah, what happened? Like, tell me what happened. And I would just be talking to him, nothing, trying to speak, just informal. And we would get done, and it would be a crowd of cats, and we would walk off, and cats would be like, man, you might need to speak. And I was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm not trying to speak. Like, I'm good. I need a job at the time, because I'm like, I don't want to grow up like I grew up, and I want to take care of my family, right, when I have one. And so from that point, man, I was searching for purpose. You know, it wasn't even about speaking at the time. I needed purpose. I needed fulfillment. I needed meaning for my life, because at one point, being an athlete, it brought me that. Mm-hmm. But when people started talking about it, that was the first time my will started turning about, and maybe I can use what happened to me to add value to someone's life.
Yeah, so I'm imagining, like, at a certain point, you're like, I'm tired of talking about this. Yeah. I'm living it. And that rehab process, obviously, was, I can imagine, grueling. Yeah. But you said you wanted to go back into your community, right? So you have the injury, you go through the rehab process, you're back in Kirkwood, and you're looking for employment. So you go back to the rec center. What was that like when you got back there?
Man, it was wild. And so the way I got back to Atlanta, I was pursuing a career to be a coach. And so I had been a graduate assistant for a few years, and I thought I was going to become a defensive backs coach, a position I played. And my wife calls me one day, and I'm in the office doing cut-ups on the computer. And she was like, I got something to tell you. I'm like, what you got? And she was like, I'm pregnant. And I was like, you pregnant? Like, I think I might have said, like, how that happened? You know what I'm so shocked.
Congratulations.
I'm shocked. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? At the time, I'm not making no money. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a graduate assistant.
At Tennessee?
Yeah, okay, like, okay. I'm not making no money. Like, they giving cats, like, cars to go to the mall. You know what I'm saying? Simon cars and stuff like that. Like, I'm not making no money. So I'm like, I might have said something like, how that happened or something. Like, in shock. And she like, how that happened? Like, you know how I happened. And so I went in and talked to the coach after I gathered myself, and I told him the situation. And I was like, I don't want to just leave. I want to handle the situation right. And he was like, nah, if you feel that conviction, you go there to Atlanta, man, and you be there for your family. Because I was like, I don't want my kids to grow up similar to how I grew up. And so at that point, I made the call to the guy that worked at the rec center in City of Atlanta Parks and Rec, where I grew up. And I was like, man, I need a gig. And he was like, Ink, you can come like yesterday. I got you. And so when I moved back, I called him and he had left. And I went up to the rec center and I told him the situation. And they was like, you overqualified. And I was like, what's that? I was like, what you mean? Oh, I just want to work with kids and create leadership curriculums. And they was like, nah, we can't do it. And at that point, I'm two blocks away from where I grew up. And I was confused. You know what I'm saying? Like I was, to be honest, I was like, God, like I know you didn't bring me from Kirkwood, a two-bedroom home, 14 people, first one in my family to graduate college and even go to college and go through all of that, get that close to making my dreams of going to the NFL come true and bring me right back two blocks away from where I grew up in my wife's grandmother's home with nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm like, I can't understand that. And so at that point, that's when the faith journey started of what I'm doing now.
And so your first speaking engagement, you told me it was at a barn.
Yeah, man.
can you talk about that?
Yeah, man. So when I first decided like to do it, I'll never forget. I called my boy Gerard Mayo. You know, he's linebackers coach for the Patriots now. And I was like, man, I need fulfillment. I need purpose. And he was like, you need to speak. And I talked to my wife about it. And I prayed, bro. It was a simple prayer. You know what I'm saying? I don't know preachy stuff. I just prayed like, God, like, I don't know what you want me to do, right? I thought it was this. It's not that. I thought it was this. It's not that. Like, I yield. Like, I give up, man. Whatever it is you want me to do, people are saying speak. If it speak, it feels right, I'll be obedient, right? And it says obedience is better than sacrifice. But as people, what do we do when we go on a journey or a pursuit of something? We judge the level of sacrifice without first being obedient, mm-hmm. right? What is it going to cost me? Right? What is this going to do to me? What do I have to give up? Why do I got to do this? So I said, I just want to be obedient. Whatever opportunities come, it ain't about money. It ain't about structure at this point. I just want to be obedient to what I feel like I'm being called to do with my life. And so at that point, you know, I get an opportunity from Mississippi. And I go, and it's like a 15-hour round trip driving. And I go and I speak. Like, when I show up, I call my wife and I'm like, man, like,
this the right man, address?
I'm in the backwoods. I'm like, he might need to call my cousin. You know, like, oh, this thing don't look right. I go back there. They got the music going, the lights going. I speak. And keep in mind, like, when I talk to my man, I just told him I'll come. Like, I ain't say, hey, man, like, let me send over my contract, get with my assistant. Say none of that. I didn't have any of that. I spoke. And after I come off stage, my man's like, thank you so much. And he gave me a coffee mug. And so I get the coffee mug. I drive back, get back like 3 a.m. And my wife was waiting up for me. She hyped. You know what I'm saying? It's my first gig. She was like, how did it go? I was like, it went great. And she was like, what you get? What they give you? And I was like, they gave me this coffee mug. And she was like, you sure? This is what you're supposed to be doing? I was like, yeah, it feels right. I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I credit her for this because this could have altered my purpose if she would have been like, nah, go do something else. But she was like, all right, cool, let's do it. Like, if you feel like this is what you're supposed to do, I'm going to rock with you.
Mm.
Yeah.
So from there, how do you scale that into a business? Like, all right, you realize this is your purpose.
Yep.
You realize that you have a gift. I'm sure you're probably, you know, working on it and getting better at it. But at what point do you say, okay, this is what I'm going to do for a living, and this is going to become my livelihood. This is going to become a business.
Absolutely. So at that point, when I decided that I had confirmation to speak, like this is what I was supposed to be doing, at that point, the money was the last thing I worried about because I didn't want it to jade my process, right? And so the thing that I focused on the most was how can I become the most diverse in my communication, in my gift, right? And so immediately I started going to all type of speaking engagements, right? I didn't pigeonhole myself and say, oh, I'm a former athlete. I just want to speak to athletes. Oh, I love kids. I just want to talk to kids. Nope. Like, I'm going to go to the birthday party with the cats 12, 13, and there's six of them, and they hit me like, Ink, can you come speak at my kid's birthday party? I'm like, bet. Ink, can you come to the country club? We got elderly women, 70 years old. I'm like, bet. It's 10 of them. Bet. Ink, can you come and speak to these C-suite cats? Bet. And can you come and speak to these athletes? And I'll never forget a cat said to me, like, man, why do I see you in all these different environments? Like, you speaking to elderly ladies, kids, athletes, corporate. Like, why are you going all over the place? Why you don't just speak to one dynamic, one group? Like, athletes, that's your element. And I was like, no. I said, because I want to become diverse. I said, I didn't know a lot at that moment about speaking, but I knew I couldn't speak to everybody the same. And I knew the more diverse I was in my communication, the more opportunities I would get. And so I looked at the landscape of it and said, what's going to work for me and my family? Where can I go and speak and get right back home to my son's baseball game? Where can I go and speak and get right back home to my daughter's recital? Okay, corporate would allow me to do that. And so every environment I go into, how can I control the narrative with my content when I speak and when I put it out on social media, when I put it out on YouTube, when I put it online, the narrative that I'm trying to create is a narrative of, even if I'm speaking to some elderly ladies, even if I'm speaking to kids, a corporate group can look at this content and say, man, that's great. We can apply that to our organization. And I knew the pay scale in corporate was a lot different. And so everybody else was a byproduct in terms of what I was trying to get to. And for most cats, they won't take the byproduct. They'll just say, I want to speak to corporate. And they'll go and they'll crash and they'll burn. And so I'm going to go with everybody else and use them as the byproduct to the goal that I'm really trying to get to and the pay scale that I'm really trying to get to while controlling the narrative at the same time and perfecting my craft and my processes.
Yeah, that was a lot, man. That was a lot because I heard family balance in there.
Absolutely.
I heard the practice and the work. And so while you were saying that, I'm like, yo, I know you studied sports psychology in school.
Absolutely.
Public speaking wasn't your thing and communication, was it? Sure. So that the practice made you, I guess, the expert at it, the different diverse communities. That's what made you the expert.
Yeah, man. Learning that and just understanding everything. I wanted to understand everything that revolved around communication. Right. And so for most cats, they'll look at me and say, like the world, like I never labeled myself motivational speaker. Like, that's never came out of my mouth, not one time. And so the world would say motivational because when I speak, I'm passionate about what I do. I love what I do. But at the core of it, I'm just a servant. Like, at the core of what we do, like, when I look at business and the landscape of business, at the core of it, like, we all in the same business. Like, we just want to make an impact. We want to add value and we want to turn a profit. Right. But the way I look at what I do, I'm a servant. And so if I want to understand everything that revolves around communication, I have to study communication. So when we step on a stage and you got all these years of experience behind your name and what you do, you've been in corporate, you work for Bank of America, or you work for this insurance company. And now I'm in a room and I'm speaking to 500 insurance agents and you're going before me and you got the experience. And then they see me in a cut and they see me dressed however I'm dressed with my collar, right in my jeans. And they looking at me like, what my man got to say to us? Like, what he finna come up here and say? Like, I get him. He worked in the business. I get him speaking to us. But what's this young cat? Let's be real about it. What's this young African-American? What's this young black cat got to say to 500 of us that do this every single day? And so if I know communication, if I know the feeling that you want your group to leave with, if I know how to index my stories and my content, I'm gonna murder my man. It ain't nothing against him. He might be nice. But he's just getting up and he's so cocky and arrogant. And he thinks because I got the experience, because I've already been in the industry, I know the industry inside and out. I'm gonna get up and I'm gonna do it. But we all know it's not about what you say, it's how you say it. We all know with perspective, it's not about what you see that matters, it's how you view it. We all know sometimes it's not about the things that you say, but how it makes the people feel that you say it to and how they receive it.
That's it.
And so in terms of me and my messaging, I understand communication. I understand behavior science. I understand sports psychology. And so you might look at me and think, oh, I'm speaking. I did this when I was younger. I would walk into a room and see a cat speak. And we all know when you see somebody that's great at what they do or do it for real, like, and practice it, you can walk into a room and see them do it. And you could be like, oh, that's easy. Because they make it look easy. Mm. You see them make the crowd laugh. You're like, oh, that's dope. I know I got some jokes I can make them laugh. You know what I'm saying? I know I got three in the pocket. And then you tell your three in the pocket, and they looking at you like, it didn't land. That plane didn't land.
That plane didn't land.
You know what I'm saying? It didn't land. And then you start to understand that, oh, it's more to it, right? And you got to understand that process of what is that that's more to it that can make them laugh, that can make them that can make them be like, oh, that can make them give you an ovation in the middle of your presentation.
So how'd you learn that as far as, because like you didn't go to school for that. And you're right. It's like one of those things where you watch a comic and you like, I'm funny. Like, I joke with my friends all the time. Yeah. I can get up in front of 10,000 people until you get up in front of 10 people and you realize it's not... Just because you're funny with your friends doesn't mean you're a comic. And you realize that they actually work on it. They have writers and they practice it and they go on the road and they test out their material. Mm-hmm. Like, a comic will go on, like, small venues and test out their material before they go to Madison Square Garden.
Even, you know, at the highest level.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how did you learn how to put material together, how to engage the crowd, how to become a public speaker? Because it's not easy. And it's actually the biggest fear that most people have is public speaking. So how'd you learn that?
I incorporated, like, feedback forms into all of my engagements, and I still do it until this day. And so when you think about most cats, if they think they're nice at what they do, they think they're nice at what they do. And a cat don't want feedback, or a cat will discredit feedback, or a cat don't want to hear it. And so I wanted feedback because I knew I wasn't the best communicator. I'm still not the best communicator by no means. But I think I put in enough work to where if I go give a presentation, like, my due diligence, my preparation, like, I'm going to put together a solid presentation because of my research and my amount of work that I'm going to put into it. And so with me, when I would get these feedback forms, I'll never forget, I was at an engagement and there was multiple speakers on the bill and it was pages of feedback. And I was speaking with, you know, a big public figure at the time. And as they gave us these pages of feedback, you know, everybody kind of grabbed their joint and was like,
boom. Just do it away.
Yeah, like, man, all right, whatever.
I ain't trying to see,
like,
that.
They talk, I ain't tripping on that. And I'm in the corner, like, I'm flipping through these joints. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm dialed in to them. Like, and one of my dudes come to me, like, man, you reading that? Like, what you reading? You speaking. You on the stage. You reading that? I'm like, yeah, I'm reading it. I'm like, because they're giving me feedback on what I need to do better. And I'll never forget, I read a comment and it showed up different ways on different pages. People would say it differently. And a person said, I love what he does, man. I love how he does it, right? But she said, I can't understand sometimes if it's passion or if it's anger. Like, I can't understand sometimes when he gets hyped and he gets to going, right? If he's happy about what happened to him or if he's really mad about it and it's covered up. Like, it showed up several different ways. And so I was like, all right, cool. This showed up. I went and I watched several of my presentations and I cut the volume off, right? And I just watched me. I watched my mannerisms.
Your body language.
Watched my body language, my facial expressions. I was like, they right. You know what I'm saying? And I went and I started altering my presentations. I went and I started altering, but I did that with several elements of my presentation. And I did this. Cats thought I just did it to master communication. Yeah, I want to master communication, but I also did this because I got a certain figure I'm trying to get to, right? I got a wife and I got children. Like, I ain't out here just to be playing and running with some cats to say, oh, we speak, it feel good, we cool. Nah, don't get it twisted. I got a wife and I got two kids, you know what I'm saying? And I feel as if what I'm doing, like, I take it serious and I feel like I'm being trusted with a level of accountability when I'm put in front of a group to speak to them and it's people on the other side of them words that I would never take for granted.
So when you take the assessment, self-assessment of yourself, I'm envisioning, is it like your wife is sitting there listening to you rehearse a speech, giving you feedback? Or are you in the mirror like, all right, I got, wait, my eyebrows cringe. Nah, wait, did I smile here? Like, what does that process look like?
No doubt. So it's several different ways, man. I'll take a story and I'll just share it. You know what I'm saying? Because storytelling is one of the greatest forms of communication. Like, you think about even when we were children, think about a cat to get a bedtime story. You know what I'm saying? You think about when you sit with your elders, a cat to sit around and tell you stories for days and you'll love it, right? You think about when a cat want to get something across, most of the time they'll put it in story form. And so for me, I'll sit there, man, and I'll practice different ways to say a story. I'll practice different ways to say things, right? And so I'll just sit there and practice it. I'll bring somebody in and practice it, but no, I won't be in the mirror looking at my eyebrows, but I'll be practicing, though.
Now, yeah, what you said was actually vitally important, especially for content creators, public speakers, things of that nature, because A, you have to be open to feedback.
Absolutely.
And B, it's just like, I always say, like, for me, learning, like, playing sports taught me more than, like, the academic side of school. So, yeah, one of the things that I learned from sports, playing sports, I never forget, you know, watching game film. And I have been watching game film my whole life. Like, you know, even in high school, like, we watched game film. And I was the kind of person, like, I never really paid attention. I was in the back. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I ain't really pay attention to game film. But I remember when I was at UMBC, shout out to Coach Monroe, and I sat down with him, and it was me and him in the office. And he was kind of like, it was the first time somebody had ever actually walked me through how to actually watch game film. Because you're thinking you're watching game film, and you're just watching it. But I'm just watching it from just like, I'm just watching it. But he's showing me, like, you see this back cut, this, and he's pausing it. And he's like, so now this is my first time actually seeing it, how a coach is seeing it. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it gave me a whole different perspective on how to actually watch the game. Like, even like, rest in peace, Kobe. What Kobe did that thing. What was it called when he was breaking down game
inside? Pick? Oh,
yeah. That's so it's like, I say that to say, for you, that's like what I'm envisioning when you're watching yourself with the no volume on, and you're watching your mannerisms and all that. It's kind of like watching game film.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, I missed that cut right here. I got to do this, da-da-da-da. So I think it's vitally important for content creators, A, not to get defensive when somebody gives them constructive criticism, and also to watch your content. You know what I'm saying? Like, absolutely. I know, like, a lot of times, like, we put out stuff and be like, we don't want to watch it after we do it.
No doubt.
But it's like, by watching it from a critical standpoint, you can say, oh, I'm not making eye contact, or I'm cutting somebody off, or it'll actually help you tremendously.
Right. It's crazy you said that, because my brother, when we started the podcast, he knows us. He's been around us our whole lives. And he was like, yo, I don't listen to anything. I watch it on mute. I watch it on mute because I just want to see how much y'all engaging with each other. I want to see if y'all looking at each other. I want to see if y'all really enjoying it. And he was like, yo, y'all got it. Because I know, like, y'all know each other so well that I know when he's about to say something and you start laughing, like, he watched the mannerism. So hearing you say it, I'm like, yo, damn, like, he knew that from the beginning.
And that helped us a lot too, because when we first started the podcast, I used to listen to it like 10 times, and I was so critical on everything. And I was like, we were saying a lot. We both were saying a lot.
Yeah.
And I was telling him, and I learned, because I have a degree in public in communication, so I learned that when somebody says most of the time, they're thinking about what they're going to say.
Yes.
You know, so it's like is like a way to actually get your thoughts together. Yeah, so when you're like, so when you
was counting them.
Yeah, it was like 37 ums.
I'm like, yo, bro. Like, yo, you talk, like, we cut each other off. Like, we got to get, like, spaced in between it. It was great because it'd be me and him in the room. Yeah. And then when he said the thing, I was like, I brought it to my coworker. Shout out to Melissa. She was like, I was like, you think I'm thinking too much? She was like, no, you should think before you speak. I was like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to stop saying it, but I am going to keep that part.
Absolutely.
So let me ask you this. When do you really hit your stride and become, all right, so you're figuring it out. You're working with a variety of different groups, church groups, sports, like you said, old ladies, anybody that's listening.
Mm-hmm.
But your goal is to eventually move up into the corporate world, because if anybody's not familiar, that's like real money is. And in the public speaking game, they pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on who you are, to bring you into corporate events, things of that nature. So when do you really start to hit that stride and move up to the next level?
Yeah, so in terms of just speaking, like in building up my presentation, building up my clientele, I have been speaking for a while. Like, I started early 20s. And as I was out speaking, a lot of people didn't notice, man. Like I've been making money in speaking for a long time. Right? Because of my perspective about it, because of how I viewed it, and because of my nature to work. And so you could go somewhere and get paid a certain amount, do a certain number of those gigs, make a certain amount a month, whether it was when you first started and you want to get $60,000 a month, right? And you getting paid whatever, whether you getting paid 10 G's at the time, whatever. You slice it up and you go and you do the work. But when my perspective changed, one day I'll never forget, I was speaking to an engineering company. And it was years ago. And I go in and I speak, and I think at the time, it's probably the third biggest steel company in the world. And I'm in there and I speak, and I'll never forget, it was the first time I got $7,500 to speak. And I speak and I'm hyped. I'm stoked, right? I get back to my hotel, I got my check, and I'm like, man, I just got 75, right? And I'm talking to the wife. I said, but something happened tonight. Joint blew my mind, right? And this was years ago. I'll never forget, after I spoke, it was a CEO in the crowd, like, of, he was a part of the company, but he had several divisions of his own. And he came up to me and he was like, man, that was incredible. He was like, can I pull you to the side and talk to you? I was like, yeah. He was like, I don't know what you got for that. He was like, but I would have gave you $20,000 to $25,000 for that. And I was like, what? I'm like, in
price,
my head,
price
I'm
going like, up, what? Price going up.
Like, and he was like, yeah, man. And check though, like that next Wednesday, my man hit me up and he offered me two separate gigs in two different cities. And he paid me that 20 a piece for each. And it changed my perspective. But what he said to me was, I'll never forget. He said, man, you're out here speaking. You work hard. I could tell you value what you do. And you're doing it the right way. He said, don't do that to your family. Mm. Right? Because I was so locked in on the process, communication. He was like, don't do that to your family. Don't undervalue yourself. Don't do that to your wife and your children. Right? Charge what you're worth. Right? You're worth this. Mm-hmm. Go out and charge it and go get it. People will give you this. Right? You've been giving everybody a deal, right, with how you operate. And that changed my perspective, man. That was years ago.
Yeah. That's the epitome of know your worth.
Absolutely.
So can we talk about 2011, May 11th?
Oh, no doubt.
I know you know the date because it's a pivotal moment in your life when you meet one of the biggest bosses of them all.
Yes, sir.
That lady who used to dominate TV and still does in media to a certain extent. You run into Oprah.
Yeah.
But very intentionally. Mm-hmm. Can you break down that story?
Yeah, man. I met Oprah. I was at a point in my life. This was around the time when I was trying to figure out some things with speaking and just my purpose in general. And I had my book at the time, my autobiography. And I was questioning myself. I was questioning my purpose. I was questioning the creator. Right. I was at that point in the journey that we all hit at some point to when a cat be like, man, am I really supposed to be doing this? Like, is it really going to provide? Am I really going to be fulfilled? And I got up one morning and I was getting dressed and I looked at my wife. You know, she was getting dressed at the time. She was a school teacher and she was getting dressed. And I said, babe, you're not going to believe it. She was like, what you got? I was like, I'm going to meet Oprah in Chicago. I'm about to give her the book. And my wife was like, oh, ain't you know Oprah? And I was like, nah. And she was like, you know somebody at the studio? And I was like, nah. She was like, you sure? I was like, yeah. She was like, go for it. You know, me and my wife been rocking since fifth grade. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So she know me, I know her. And when she said go for it at the time, I probably had like $200 to my name. I was in my truck. I went out. I got in my truck. Like, I left that day. Like, when she went to work, I left. I got to Chattanooga. I called my buddy Jeff, attorney in Knoxville, Tennessee. He picked up. I said, Jeff, you're not going to believe it. Jeff's like, what's up, Ink? I said, man, I'm headed to Chicago. I'm about to meet Oprah and give her my book. Jeff was like, Ink, you know Oprah? I was like, nah. Jeff was like, oh, I know what this is. He was like, Ink, you're an extremely ambitious dude. He's like, I get it. He's like, man, but the chances of this happening are slim to none. He said, man, I want you to hang up this phone. Call me when you get to Knoxville. Like, I don't want you to go all the way up there and be too embarrassed and too hurt when it doesn't happen. And I called Jeff when I got to Knox. He picked up. And he said, you're still going, aren't you? I said, yep. He said, stop by and pick me up, man. I'll just make the ride with you. And we get up there that night. Jeff, you know, he gets us a room. Get up the next morning. And I go downstairs and Jeff's standing in the corner getting ready to go work out. And he watching me like, this dude's serious. And I'm at the front desk like, man, you could tell me how to get to Harpo Studios. Like, I'm dead serious. And they give me the little joint and I go to walk out of the door. And Jeff was like, Ink, wait, man. Like, I'm going to get us a little car real quick. And we go over there and we pull up. And this was when her last shows were happening around that time. Mm-hmm. People everywhere. I get out of the car with the book. Jeff was like, I'm going to go across the street to this little coffee shop. He's like, I'll see you in a minute. I'm sure this won't be long. And so I'm walking around the building. Now, keep in mind, I just got my book. I'm walking. And every door that would open, if I was by a door, I would try to go in it, right? Just young, ambitious, right? Not thinking. And as soon as I would step in the door, like, hey, I'm Inky Johnson. I drove up from Atlanta. I want to give Oprah my book. They like, man, get out of here. Like, we don't do that. Like, I'm like, bro, I thought y'all give away cars. Like, I just got a book. You know what I'm saying? Like, y'all tripping. Like, y'all give away cars on TV and stuff. They like, we don't do that. And I got so discouraged, bro. I went around the back of the building. And I sat down, right? And I was like sitting just on the side of the building. I was like, man, my wife gonna go off. And I'll never forget, I looked up, everybody had went in the building. And when I looked up, I looked down the sidewalk and I was walking. It looked to be like a homeless gentleman. I sit down beside my man and I was like, how you doing? My man was like, I'm great. He was like, how are you? I was like, man, I'm cool. I seen better days, right? The irony of the situation. Right. And when I look up, I see Oprah and her security guard coming down the sidewalk. And I stand up. It's just me and them. And I'm like, surely, when I walk toward her, the security gonna come up, move me out of the way, but I'm gonna still take my shot. And as I'm walking, she's walking. And they don't stop, and I don't stop. Get a couple of feet away from me. I say, hey, I'm Inky Johnson. I drove up from Atlanta. I wanted to give you my book. And first thing she does, like, I got on a 2X suit at the time. Like, you say ain't nowhere near 2X.
The picture is there. The blue suit.
She, yeah, she grabs the joint, like, do a light little
shake. She grabbed your suit?
Yeah, yeah. She do a light little shake. Like, this is a nice suit. I think she's trying to see. She trying to run game, right? I was like, thank you. I was like, I drove up to give you my book. I would love to take a picture with you. She grabbed the book. She's like, sure. She handed it to the security guard. We take the picture. She was like, all right, I got to go in and do my show. And as she's walking in, my man Jeff running. He's like, Ink, tell her to wait.
Like, nah. Nah, you missed
I was
it.
Like, oh, yeah, little faith. Boy. And as I go to walk off, man, I'll never forget this. I go to walk off. Her security guard says, he was like, hey, little man. He's like, come here. And I walk over to him. He was like, I'm not saying anything is going to come of this. I'm not saying you're going to be on a book club show. I'm not saying any of that. He said, I just want you to know what just happened. That never happens. He said, she'll tell me go up, clear him out, or tell him send it here. And she'll never get it. He was like, I'm not saying anything is going to come out of it. I just want you to know that that moment that just happened, it never happens. I was like, thank you. And I walked off and I sent the picture out, put it on social media. And Cass was like, man, you going to be on the show? You going to be on the book club? You know what I'm saying? I was like, nah. I was like, I don't care, man. It ain't about that. And then, you know, Cass like, what you mean you don't care? It ain't about that. You went all the way up there? I was like, it wasn't about that for me. I said it was about confirmation. And I was like, the creator showed me confirmation in that moment that he was still walking with that 7-year-old kid from Kirkwood, right, that fell in love with the game of football at a young age and wanted to help his family. I was trying to find purpose. Right, Oprah was the vehicle. Oprah was the tool that God placed in my journey at the time to say, oh, bro, I got you. Like, if you want to do something this outlandish to see if I'm still rocking with you, do it. And I'm going to show you I'm still rocking with you. And so at that point, it gave me all the confirmation and all the fuel I needed. And I firmly believe amongst our journeys in life, like, it's some things that we encounter and some things we go through. Like, I'm sure y'all done experienced it with the podcast. Entrepreneurs experience it all the time. Like, God speaks to us in different ways. Like, things happen. Confirmation comes in different ways to where you know, like, oh, that was that moment to tell me to keep pressing and to keep going. And that was that moment for me that told me, nah, I ain't keep going. I got you.
Did that relationship ever mature to
anything? It never yielded nothing. Okay. Never yielded nothing,
but it
bro.
Just gave you confirmation.
Yeah, it propelled my faith. It's probably the most important thing.
I'm sure you'll link back up with her one day.
One day.
I think the stars, that faith journey is going to continue.
Let me ask you this, because I'm sure you're aware of, but I got put on, shout out to Val, she's a friend of mine. She was the first person to tell me about a rider.
Mm-hmm.
When you started first speaking, and she's like, you got a rider? And I'm like, a rider? Like, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so man. She's like, you know, I'm going to send you my rider. So in her rider, it was like, all right, I need a first class plane ticket. I need a 4 to 5-star hotel accommodation. I need to be paid 50% up front, 50% on the back end. Da-da-da. She's like, you just can't be like saying like, hey, just give me cash. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta treat this like a business. So can you talk about that and give some game for the people that might not be aware of like how that works for the public speakers?
Absolutely. It's very important. And because if you don't have that in place, you have nothing to hold them to. And a cat'll finesse you in that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, cats think a cat'll be finessing in the street. Like, you'll show up and that check won't be there.
Mm.
And the cat'll say, oh, something happened with accounting. Right. And but you done went up and you gave them everything you had and you going back home empty handed and you can't blame nobody but yourself because you didn't have any structure in place. Mm-hmm. And so for me, when it came to hotels, when it came to flights, when it came to deposit, when it came to direct deposit, whatever the case may be, I'll never forget when I first started, you know, you want to be modest. You don't want to ask for too much and you want to be respectful. And I was trying to do that. And the cat was like, no, like this comes with the business, right? Like how you do what you do, you want to be comfortable when you go on the road. And so for me, like everywhere I go, it's a first class flight in my rider. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere I go, they got me 5-star accommodations. Everywhere I go, I'm being paid before I go most of the time, or I get the check on site. Like I don't go anywhere and I go speak and I'm not paid either yet or at that event, because I look at what I do and I run what I do like a business. It's a real business. And so I treat it that way. But that rider, that contract is very important, because if you don't have that in place, like a cat will get you to come and speak, you'll speak, and then it'll start to jade your process, because instead of worrying about your content, now you're worrying about the money and worrying about how you're going to get it. You need to be worried about your mission and your focus and your principles and your values.
So you obviously present as a solo entity. Mm-hmm. Are you also handling the business, or you built out a team that creates the structure and creates the systems to make your job a little lighter, right? You can just focus on the speaking.
Yeah, so got 4 cats, you know, and we operate as a company. It used to be a point in time to where I was doing things by myself early in my career, to where when I just started speaking and then opportunities started to come and I'm fielding everything, right? I'm negotiating, I'm talking to a cat, I'm emailing, right? And then it got to a point to where I started to really structure my business and get people on my team. And a cat gave me some great advice early on, man, because I was speaking to these companies and to these corporations. And another thing, I wouldn't just go on the road to speak. I would go on the road to acquire, you know, knowledge. I would want to get information. I would go to these successful companies. Like, I'm not just coming to speak. I want to learn, too. So I'm going to come and sit in the office and see, can I talk to you for an hour? Right? How have you sustained this company for the past 30 years and been this successful with the amount of employees you got? Like, let me get some of that information. Like, Dave would tell you, everywhere I go, when I go to, like, a place to where it's an event and people are speaking, like, bro, I'm going to show up with my notepad, right? Like, if y'all have a live event and I'm there, like, you can guarantee I'm going to be there with my notepad and my pen, and I'm going to be listening and taking notes. And I'll never forget, I was talking to a dude, and I said, what's the most important thing you can tell me about a company, a business, building it out in the position that I'm in, right? And he said, a little success can create a lot of overhead. He said, a little success can create a lot of overhead. And for me, it was so important, because a lot of times in speaking, in whatever realm they're doing it in, cats would go out and get 12 cats, right? And don't even know how to control a payroll, right? Why you got 12 cats? Why you going to get a building? You know what I'm saying? Like, why you got a build? What, you going to just film yourself? Like, now, when you got an operation in that building, like, you got content in that building, you got events in that building, that's great. But for most cats, cats want to seem so big time and seem so important. Cats go get all these people and don't know how to structure and don't know how to pay them. And so I'm all about being efficient and effective. So if I can get the job done with 4 cats and we can turn a profit and do what we do in a great way, everybody, family can eat and we can handle our business, that's work.
Yeah,
like cats be lazy.
That's incredible, because in my mind, I'm thinking about one of my favorite quotes that you said. When you go into a space and you're like, yo, I'm willing, even at this level, to be going and taking notes and learning from other people. You said, I want to read it to you. You said, locating ego in situations so we don't miss our blessings.
Yeah,
so when you started, where was your ego? And is this something that you had to learn through the process? Like, you know what? Let me humble myself before, so I can continue the faith journey and see the blessings and receive them.
Oh, for sure. Definitely had to humble myself, because, you know, when you're young and you're learning how to speak, you're like a young cat that hoop. You know how to hoop. You get a crossover. You know what I'm saying? You know how to come from that triple threat. You know how to pivot. You just want to dunk. You know what I'm saying? You just want to smack. Once you learn how to dunk, everybody getting posterized. You know what I'm saying? I want to put everybody on a poster. And it's the same way with speaking. Like, you'll just go in there and you just want to kill it. Like, you just want to go hard, right? I'm a passionate dude. I'm studying. Like, I'm seeing cats do what they do, right? I'm going to events and a cat will tell me, like, man, like, you got the highest feedback, but you got paid the least. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got the most, you got the greatest feedback. Like, they gave you an ovation, but ink out of everybody that just spoke, bro, they paid you the least. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's an ego check. But at the same time, I didn't take it and say, oh man, they paid like a little boy. I'm like, bro, what did they do to get paid what they got paid? I ain't tripping. I got a wife and I got children. put me on game. Let me understand it, right? I didn't want to be a speaker my whole life, so I never studied the industry. So when you tell me this, let me locate my ego in the situation. Let me find my ego in the situation. Because as people, the reason it's so important, when you start dealing with things, whether it be anger, whether it be pressure situations, opposition, adversity, whether you're speaking and things are not going the way you want them to go, like at a certain point, you got to check your ego. Whether you get to a point and you think you demand a certain amount and you're not getting paid that, and so you end up pricing yourself out of the market, you got to locate your ego so you can be smart about what you do and learn how to navigate some of those treacherous waters to accomplish the goal.
It's one of these things that's interesting as far as pricing for entrepreneurs. And I personally think the right price is whatever people are willing to pay for it. That's the right price for a product. Because you might think your product is worth a whole bunch more, and it probably is, but if nobody's willing to pay for it, you're just going to stand and like be broke. Like about
somebody's going to come. They're going to come.
So I feel like public speaking is the same way, because like we spoke to like Max Maxwell when he told us like he had Gary Vee come, and I think he paid him like $120,000, and then you got public speakers that might make $100, right? Yeah. And everybody's in between. So how do, for people that's trying to get into the game, or even people that might be in the game, but it's one of these things where it's like you said, a lot of times you might just lowball yourself because you feel like you don't want to tell somebody a crazy number. Yeah, yeah, and they in their mind, they're thinking like, oh, I would have paid you three more times than that. So how do you know what the right price is, and how do you work your way up like periodically without actually pricing yourself out of situations?
So like a strategy that worked for me, like early on, I would just try to put out different prices, you know, and try to test the market and see, all right, they land in that 10, or they land in that 20, or they land in that 25, like the most. And so, boom, I'm going to go with this. And one time a dude told me, he's like, nah, but I don't do that. He's like, create the form. I was like, what form? The price range form. Mm-hmm. Like, just put it on the form. And if a cat wants you, get a couple of questions on there so you can see if they're serious or not. And they'll put their price range in there. And you don't even have to ask them. And so you could be thinking 25, but you create this form on your site or whatever source they're coming to witness and see you do what you do. You create the form. They put in the price range. And so you could have been thinking, oh, man, I'm going to do this event for 20. And a catapult on there, we got a budget of 60 to 70K.
That's what Lenny and Jeff said, right? Exactly. Like you don't you don't really say your price. You ask what their budget is. You ask what's your budget.
And then you'll know if this is something that I can allocate time for.
Absolutely.
Yeah, shout out to Jenny. They told us that.
We made a Google Doc.
And you see people do that all the time. Like even like if you're working with like a PR firm or something like that, they don't say what their price is. They say, what's your monthly budget? What are you looking to spend?
We'll know what we can provide you with.
No, that makes a lot of sense because you don't really know what the price is. If they give you a budget, and then you can also offer a la carte services. Like, all right, I usually charge 50, but your budget is 10. So here's what we can do. We can do a Zoom call and da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I've gotten some of the biggest paying gigs of my life doing it that way. That when I got the form through, if I just would have looked at the gig, I wouldn't have been thinking the price range that they were thinking, right? And they blew me out of the water. And I'm like, bet. I remember one time I was like, brother, they make a mistake and put a zero on that joint. And then you talk to them, and you're like, oh, no, they dead serious, right? And it was a blessing for me, man, because it, you know, it takes off a load in the situation to where you going back and forth. Now it's just, what do you have allocated? What's your budget? What's the range of it? And then y'all go from there.
And then you can do like different things, like a panel discussion.
Absolutely.
An hour, a half an hour, things like that. Let me ask you this. How have you been managing, and how have you seen the industry change during COVID? We're in the age of COVID. Everybody's, you know, restructuring their business model. And public speaking is one of those things where it, you know, it shut down for the vast majority of the world for live events, virtual events still going on. So how has that affected the industry, you, and how have you been able to pivot?
Yeah, man. So I think with the nature of COVID and what it's done to the business, I think this is why relationships are so important. But also, I think this is why communication is so important and retainers are so important, meaning you already have relationships and you already have people that you speak for numerous of times. You already have contracts in place for how many times you go to these people, these organizations, these teams. And so when this hits, it's kind of just shifting, you know, the landscape. But with me, at the beginning of COVID, like I talked to a couple of my buddies that were speaking And cats just try to get greedy, right? Because you couldn't go live at first. Now I'm able to go to certain places with small leadership councils, with companies and teams and things of that nature, and still be able to do work. But when it first happened, like y'all said, it shut down everything and it was just virtual. And so what I saw cats do was get greedy, right? Cats, somebody hit them up, hey, can you do this virtual? Cats just go crazy, right? Like, nah, it's going to be this. And so they'll just be like, all right, bet, we ain't doing it. And the cat just fall on his pockets, right? And so for me, when a lot of the companies and teams and people that I have been working with that I've already made money with, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've already been making money with a lot of these people. I've already been serving them. When they hit me up at the beginning of COVID, I could see the climate of what they were going through. Like cats were panicking. Mm-hmm. Cats were stressed out. Inc., we just need you to talk to them. Bet, let's set it up. When do you all want to do it? Mm-hmm. How many times do you want to do it? This early. How many times do you want to do it? All right, we could do two sessions. Boom, boom, boom. Can you do this? An hour, hour and a half? No problem. Let's do it. And I did it. I did a lot of them. I didn't charge a thing. And then once things got stabilized and people kind of got back into the pocket to where it was like, all right, now I see how to navigate it. Like all that bread came back times 10,
yeah,
right? Because of the relationships that I already had in place. And I was willing to do something that a lot of people wasn't. And that was at the beginning of the pandemic. I was just focusing on serving the people.
So you, so that's key too. So it's like when even a lot of landlords, I remember Lord of the Slum, shout out to Fernando. He's a big time landlord in Jersey. And he was like, you know, give your tenants, if you can, give them some leeway.
Yeah.
So you can't let them take advantage of you, but it's a pandemic. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, like, yo, give them a month off. Like give them, you know what I'm saying? Give them a couple of weeks to get them back on their feet. Like you trying to beat these people over the head and they're going to be like, I don't got it. Find somebody else.
Now it's on
it's
you.
A pandemic.
Yeah.
You can't kick me out. No judge is going to put me out right now. Not in New York, at least. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Let's go back up to New York,
yeah. So talk about that a little bit. Because, I feel like that level of just humanity, mm-hmm. even everybody struggling, you got to take that little loss mm-hmm. for the long-term win. As you said, like, instead of trying to just get in somebody's pockets right away. Man. And it's like you end up hurting yourself even worse.
Yeah. And I think what it comes down to, like you said, humanity and valuing people. Like cats operate out of scarcity, mm-hmm. right? Like you operating out of scarcity. Like it ain't going to be no more times where you can speak, no more times where you can make money, and it's going to make you make bad decisions and bad choices. And so for me, it's about valuing what you do first and foremost and valuing the people that you're able to service. And so for me, like, a lot of times people see me and they say, hey, bro, you don't have a lot of products, right? Like, what's up with that? And so it's a strategy on my part, right? Like, I'm trying to build up a level of trust with the people that follow me, right? Like, in my industry, a lot of people sell things and they do a great job at it, whether it be courses, programming, product, merch, whatever, and they do a great job at it. And then there's a lot of people that do it, and you can see it. It's a quick hit. They're just trying to get something. And so in my industry, I'm very aware of where I stand in terms of what I represent. I'm a young African-American male. I'm 34 years old. Some of these rooms I go into, some of these companies I go into, cats are sitting on the front row like, what my man doing? And so I knew if I was out selling a certain product, Chick-fil-A wasn't going to call me. Mm-hmm. I knew that. I knew if I was out selling a certain product, like Wells Fargo wasn't going to call me. I knew if I was out selling a certain product, Bank of America wasn't going to call me. Right? I knew if I was out selling a certain product, the third highest selling steel company in the world, they weren't going to call me. Not because I was selling a product, but the perception that went along with the product of where I stand in my industry. And so in terms of me and how I view the landscape of it, when they call me, they expect me to say, oh, it's going to be this if you want me to speak at the beginning of the pandemic. I know you expect me to do it. I'm a young black man, right? I got a gift. I know you expect me to do it. So I'm going to use reverse psychology on you. And when you say, what is it going to cost? It's nothing. I'm good. Right? I'm going to just add value to you. I'm going to just serve you. Right? And I'm in the pocket to where I can do it because of how I grew up. Right? I ain't out here living crazy. I ain't out here all over the top doing this and doing that with something to prove. No, I'm cool. I can do it. I can hold my position. Right? And I'm going to provide so much value that after I provide the value, when you get stabilized and you get good and you remember people that helped you and looked out for you in the midst of adversity and opposition, the first person you're going to think about when you come out of the storm is, I'm going to look out for my man, Inc. He served us when it got hot in the kitchen.
So that's interesting because like now, right, and especially I know you're a family man.
Absolutely.
Even now, like you have to go and you're coming back in the same day because you want to be around your family. Is it what do you think the going forward, what it will be for speakers, right? Because most people are like, yo, I'm good right here at my home. Oh, yeah, to get awesome. Me to actually come to you, yeah, we're going to have to pay more. You think that's where we're headed with this?
Yeah, I think in a certain instance it is, like for some people, right? And if you got the leverage to do it, hey, by all means, do it. But for a cat that don't have that type of leverage, I think he's going to have to make that adjustment. Mm-hmm. And the virtual joint, man, that's sweet. Like, it's sweet, bro. You can sit there with your camera and you can get busy. And if you really can get busy, you can get, man, it's sweet. You can knock out six in a day and some cat's going to pay you for it. Like, for real, you can sit there in your living room, you can clock 80K. You know what I'm saying? And don't leave and go in there and, you know, fix your sandwich. You know what I'm saying?
Eat some Captain Crunch.
Take your dog out to use the bathroom. Pick your kids up in the carpool line. It's sweet. You know what I'm saying? And so, but when cats ask you to go to places, I think it's just based upon what works for you, man. And if it does work, you know, going and giving them people all you got. But I think it's going to work both ways. I don't think the industry would go back to the same. Like me, for example, I never used to do virtual. Cats used to hit me up and be like, hey, can you do virtual? I just love doing live so much that I never tapped into it. But when the pandemic hit, you know, I had to have a level of mental agility to make that shift so I can do it. And I fell in love with it.
So what's next for you? Your vision as far as how far do you want to take this? Are you want to like help other people get in the game?
Mm-hmm.
I know you write books. Yeah. Like, I know you seem like the kind of person that's always thinking ahead. The next play. So what's the next play?
Yeah. So I help a lot of cats, man, in terms of just, you know, talking in an unofficial way. Like I don't have them on contract or have them on, you know, no program, anything like that. But for me, the way I view speaking, like a cat could speak for a long time. Like you look at Les.
Yeah.
Les up there. Les Brown, you know, the OG of it, but he's up there and he's still able to do this. You know, some of the cats, Tony Robbins, you know, E.T., like you can do this for a long time. And so for me, I just want to be a good steward of my gift, you know, and I feel like a lot of times when a cat speaks, like it's exhilarating. You go, people are clapping for you, people going crazy, like a cat can get full of itself real quick and prostitute that gift. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? A cat can start to prostitute his gift and then end up with a landslide. And so me being a good steward of my gift, making sure I'm using it in the right way. And also, man, just growing and scaling in different avenues, right? Whether it be universities, whether it be corporate companies and things of that nature, teaching more. Like teaching is something that I have on my agenda. Becoming a professor is something that I have on my agenda. And so being a great steward of my gift is something that's...
How does that actually... Because you brought up a good point. When Kanye said, it's hard to be humble when you're stunting on a Jumbotron.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's a crazy experience when it's like, you know, thousands of people that's captivated by you. Mm-hmm. And then everybody's trying to talk to you after you get off stage. And you know what I'm saying? Like, how is that for you? And how have you been able to manage that and not let that, you know, go to your head? Because it's like anything. It could definitely... jade you.
Oh, no doubt.
So how has that been for you?
It's hard, man. That's why, like, I speak about locating that ego. And the reason I say locate it is because, like, we can't kill it. Like, we all got ego.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we can't kill it. We all got it. It's a part of who we are. And so it's that in different situations, how can we locate it? Like, we can walk out of the door right now and a cat can say something crazy and that ego gonna flare up immediately. Like, hey, man, like, it's on. You know what I'm saying? But when you locate it, nah, man, I got kids. You know what I'm saying? My man just talking reckless. He lost. Beat it. You know what I'm saying? Locating that ego. When you get up there and they clap for you, great job. You don't walk out of the door and think you treat the guy that's driving you like trash, right? The cat that hold the door for you, you acting as if, nah, you're supposed to hold the door for me, right? It's cats that go in rooms and they speak at people, right? Not speaking to people because they feel as if once they get out on the stage, a mistake that people make, they think when they get invited to speak to a certain group, certain company, right, that cat's just inviting you to speak because, one, yeah, they might want to learn from you. Two, yeah, they want to hear what you got to say. But a lot of cats think they're important. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll never forget watching a speaker. And I was in a room with one of my dudes back up in Tennessee. It was in the early years. And a dude speaks, right, does his thing. And my man is thinking like, no, I'm the man. I'm the most important dude in the room, right? And the dude wanted to take a picture with him. One of my older dudes, and, you know, he took a picture with him, but he kind of brushed him off, and the dude was like, okay. And the dude he brushed off, my man owned 50 hotels. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Owned 50.
Yeah.
Blocked the whole blessing.
And he just in there, he chilling. Like, he ain't trying to be loud. My man owned 50 hotels and drive a Honda. You know what I'm saying? So if you see him, your perception, you might be thinking with your ego, if you popping and you got whatever you got and you see my man. I remember the first time I was sent to meet him and they was like, yeah, he owned 50 hotels. They telling me about him and I'm riding around the lot.
Where is he?
I'm like, where is he?
Where he at, though?
I'm thinking like, Ray, I'm like, I'm surely thinking like, my man got 50 of them. He up here in that thing. I'm riding around. I'm like, I don't see him. What is he driving? It was like, he in the Honda. I was like, oh, my man been here, right? And I go meet him, bro, the most chill, nicest person in the world. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of cats to learn. You know, even when you're doing what you're doing and you're having a level of success, man, bravo. You know, good riddance to you that things are going well. But always understanding, man, like being smart about your gift and understanding sometimes, man, that new money loud, that old money quiet.
That's
watch how you treat people.
It's perfect timing because you said success. So I wrote down another one of my favorite quotes. It was like, it's easy to acquire success and not acquire fulfillment.
Absolutely.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, man. Like
that's the word.
Yeah, man. That's success. You know, and it's all individual to us all what that means. Like to a certain cat, it could be making whatever he makes, and that's cool. A certain cat, it could be, man, I get up and I go to work every day. I make it back home, take care of my children, take them to the ball game. It's all individual. But like we do work here at the homeless shelter, downtown Atlanta, with the Atlanta Mission. And you come in there and you see the kids and you serve the women food and you talk to the youngins. You know what I'm saying? The young adults, man, what's up? Talk to them about life. And like I tell them all the time, bro, like it ain't nothing wrong with being rich. Like don't let nobody trick you. Right? Because you want to be rich, you want to make money, like handle your business, do your thing. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But I always tell them one of the easiest things in the world is to acquire success and not capture fulfillment. And you might have to navigate and it might take you a while to get there. It take us all a while to get. We don't just get there overnight. But when you get to a certain point, make sure you're doing something that fulfills you because our work is going to take up a lot of our lives. Mm-hmm. So if we're not doing something that's fulfilling us, you can have success. And if you're not careful, you could become a public success. But behind closed doors, you're a private failure. Not because you don't have the skill set and talents, but it's gotten you to a place that your skill sets and your talents can't sustain you. And so making sure you're fulfilled while you're capturing success is important.
Another inspiration.
I have one last question for you.
Sir.
How do you, I was just thinking about this, as far as the public speaking realm, you personally,
mm-hmm.
how do you market yourself to these companies or do companies just come to you? Like, how's that? Because in my brain, I'm like, how would you know if somebody wants you to speak? I guess once you get to a certain level, people is calling you like now at this point in your career. Mm-hmm. But did you ever at any point market yourself to organizations, companies, sports teams? Like, hey, I do public speaking and da-da-da-da. Or was it always them just coming to you?
Nah, early on, I partnered with a lot of agencies and speaking bureaus that I felt had the same values and morals that I have. Like I went to meet with a lot of them and they're all over the country. You got bureaus here in Atlanta, Nashville, New York, California, Chicago, and you talk to them and you tell them your goals, your dreams, your aspirations. And some cats are going to be like, cool, that works. Or some cats are going to be like, nah, that's not for us. And so I partnered with a lot of them and they would put me in these different rooms. And a thing that I was aiming for was when I did a conference, whether it was in education, sports, corporate, I wanted it to be more so of a national conference. So it's people from all over the world. And so when they come, even though I came to serve this group, like it's going to be people that's going to leave and go back to different markets. That's going to probably follow up and hit me up and say, man, I love what you did at that education conference. I love what you did at that corporate conference. And then when I go speak for them, the way I built my audience was when I would follow up with them, I would say, hey, man, if you enjoyed what you experienced, this is in the early days. If you enjoy what you experience, are there three companies or three other groups that you would refer me to that you think could benefit from my services? Hmm. And from that point, I continue to build up my clientele and manage it from there.
Now, that's so key because I'm a financial advisor. And when I was like in my early stages of trying to build my financial planning book, That's one thing that they really taught me was like referrals. Mm-hmm. Either you're going to cold call or you're going to get referrals. And me, like, cold calling, like, I rob a bank before I cold call. Like, I hate cold calling. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just the worst thing in the world. So I'm like, if I'm going to be successful, I have to find a way to get referrals. And I had developed a system in place where I used to have a sheet with, like, five names on it. So the first five names was friends and family. So after the end of the closing the situation, because the worst thing you can do is close a deal and that's it. Because then you get paid and that now you got to try to find something. And that's like, that's the worst thing in the world. So I used to ask them, like, who do you know that can benefit? And then a lot of times they'll say, like, well, I'm not really sure. I don't know. Then the second half of the sheet was like, all right, just had a kid, just lost a job. So now I'm not asking you randomly. I'm specifically saying, like, all right, these are the criteria. Yeah. And it's like, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, I'm not leaving without three names.
Listen up, man. This is a true story. Like, this is a fact. Like, he came to my house with this. Yeah. I'm looking at him like, yo, Shotty, you know the same people I know, bro. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. He's like, nah, think of your coworkers there, bro. I'm like, all right, man, I guess.
Nah, it's not like, because unless you're in a, I think everybody at some point in time should take a sales job, a commission-based job, because it teaches you to be a real wolf out here. Yeah. And unless you have never been able to do that, you don't fully appreciate the value of referrals. Mm. Because most people, you don't need a referral. Yeah. But then you realize referrals are life and everything helps you. So now even with the podcast, it's like I might ask, yo, can you introduce me to this person? And that's how we get a lot of our guests. The same type of system is referrals, right? And it's like once you learn one system, you could put it in place for everything. So that's dope. And I didn't know that it was actually agencies. I guess it's like booking agents.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot more sense now. Yeah. It's like, all right, they vet you out. They believe your story. You might be good. And then once you actually get big enough, you don't need that anymore.
Mm. Yep. Go independent. But also you can meet some of them cats, man, and they'll go crazy for you, man. Cats will get you a lot of opportunities.
Like what's some of the names of the best companies?
So you got Executive Speakers Bureau. You got Athletes and Sports Entertainment. You got, Big Speak out in California. Like it's a ton.
So it's a whole industry. Yeah, like
a ton of them, man.
That represent public speakers.
It's a ton of them.
So public speaking is your thing now. Mm-hmm. Well, what's your relationship with the thing you grew up loving and dedicating the first 20 years of your life with? What's your relationship with football? Still follow it? Or you still love it?
Yeah, I love it, man. And I do work with the NFL. Do work with NCAA. Do work with a lot of schools and groups in terms of colleges. Mm-hmm. So I'm very close to it because it's something that I care about, and like I've been in them NFL teams when, I was sitting in the back and they got several different speakers and they got the financial literacy guy coming up. They got the tax guy coming up. They got the estate planning guy coming up to speak and it's optional, and I'm there and I'm speaking after one of these dudes. I've been in there when cats would leave the room. You know what I'm saying? And then you see a cat 3 years later, going through it on TV, losing everything. And you think back like, man, my man wasn't even in the meeting when the dude was presenting about this stuff. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And so being in there, man, and being passionate about, just some of the rates and the statistics of athletes, how cats get finished with the game and divorce rate or, the bankruptcy rate, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And so, being locked into that and making sure I touch on all those aspects as well is something that's very important to me.
It's been a pleasure, brother. Thank you for joining us.
Sir.
Definitely a lot of free game, a lot of inspiration, motivation. And like I said, I feel like everybody should share their journey.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's like, no matter what the platform is, you might share it with 10 people on Instagram. You might share it with 1 million people in a best-selling book. But it's like, never discount your worth by the amount of people that are consuming it. Because that stops a lot of people, too, where they're like, only got 10 likes on my post. Like, you know what I'm saying? But you never know. That one like might have changed somebody's life. Like, you might have stopped somebody from committing suicide. You never know. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you look at it from that standpoint, it was worth it. It's not about, like, the millions of people that'll come if it's God's plan. But, I just feel like, a lot of times people, even myself, like, I've been wanting to do what we do now as far as, but I was just discouraged because I'm like, who cares about it? Who cares about financial literacy? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people going to look at me like it's corny, da 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 da. And then it's like, if I would have started 5 years ago, we would have been way even further than we are now. Man. So I just think that stories like yours is just amazing from so many different standpoints. So thank you once again for joining us. What would you like to tell the public? Any ventures, book, social media handles, all that?
Now, first off, man, I want to thank you both, man, just for the opportunity. You know, I want to thank you all for your platform, man. Y'all add a lot of value to just the community. I'm saying it's been cats that I done had sit down and watch y'all interviews when y'all talk about certain things when it came to financial literacy. Because where we come from, like me specifically, a lot of things I didn't learn. Like nobody passed down certain knowledge bases to me about certain things. Like when I got out of college, nobody told me how to get a house. I had to figure that out with my wife. My wife lost both her parents when she was 7. We had to figure that out. We had to figure out accounts. We had to figure out taxes. Like I remember the first time I paid $250,000 in taxes. You know what I'm saying? And my man, my CPA was looking at me like, you got it? Yeah, I got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, these syrup sandwiches, you know I got it. Ain't out here playing, you know what I'm saying? But having to learn
real zone six,
man, you know what I'm saying? And having to go through that trial and error. And after that, you know, waking up and paying attention and understanding how to get in better position so, you know, some of these things won't have to happen. And so for y'all to do what y'all do and the way that y'all do it, man, it's an honor and it's a privilege. To everybody out there, man, keep pressing. You know, keep your head up, man. Stay focused.
I appreciate that. How can they follow you on social media?
Inky Johnson Motivate on Instagram. Inky Johnson on the other social media platforms. It's just Inky Johnson Motivate because a cat hacked me and took my name. So I couldn't be Inky
Johnson. Oh, did
Johnson.
They?
Yeah.
When?
Hacked me, man.
Recently?
Yeah, was it last year? Last year? Yeah,
oh, so you got to start back from zero?
Yeah, cat hacked my whole joint. And so I had to come back with the Inky Johnson Motivate. And but it's Inky Johnson on Twitter, Facebook, and InkyJohnson.com.
Yep. And what the books that they can get?
Books, right now, Inky Johnson. Cats them inflated them. Don't buy them. We're going to get them back on our site because cats just bought them and they put them online and they jacked up the prices.
Oh, man.
I ain't trying to knock cats hustle or nothing, but... You ain't got to pay $100 for my book, man. Right now. You know what I'm saying? Right now. Yeah, but just wait on it, man. We got it coming.
All right. Troy, housekeeping. Yeah,
shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. You know that's our Proud to Pay program. Everybody that is in a Tier 5, you are a member of EYL University, the number one place for anything business, entrepreneurship, and finance, man. So shout out to all the earners that's on there learning and executing on the information. That's the most important thing. We're not just hoarding the information. We actually... executing on it. So every time we share a story, it's encouraging to us to keep going and adding more value. And shout out to everybody that's been supporting the merch. See, Shadi got that olive one. I ain't get that one yet, but we have to talk to Mike. Mike, what's good?
We gotta get you some merch.
We gotta get you some merch.
Yeah.
For sure. So we appreciate everybody that's been patient in the support of that. So
Man. Shout out to EYL Network. We got a podcast network. We got the superstar Dave Shands in the building right now.
Yeah.
Sleepers for Suckers.
Social proof podcast.
Burning it up
right now. On your head top.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to Ash Cash and the Vault.
Inside the Vault. Yeah.
Shout out to Ian Market Mondays. So, you know, we building a no new limit out here, man.
Yeah, you know what? We need to have an inspirational speaker podcast. Now that I think of it.
Yeah, that's a fact. So, thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.